I'm Carrie Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. So excited to have you all. If you're here with us, say hello. We can't see you unless you let us know you're here, and we are here for it, and all of your questions. We can't wait to unpack those in a bit. Before we get there, a little bit about today. So today I have Adam Aragon. He's an expert in raising the bar and scaling companies involved with B2C, B2B, and B2E. He's seen it all, folks. He's seen it all from fintech to SaaS and the world of user behavior, user experience, and user interface. There's a common thread here, folks, and it is about the user. I know we all like to think it's about us, so we are the center of the universe, but Adam says differently, and I'm here for it. Adam has 20 years of web management and development experience, along with 10 plus years of marketing, digital marketing, growth strategy, optimization, and marketing technology, having managed multiple brands globally for web strategies and growth experience. He's an end-to-end designer and developer. That is one of a kind, folks. I can speak from experience. Finding people who can do both is hard to find. So lean in and listen up, because we're going to unpack it all. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was quite an intro. I feel like you made me seem way cooler than I am. You know, I'm gonna take it.
We're gonna lean into it, because you are you are that cool for sure. And it's super exciting to have you on. I could talk about web all day, being not quite. I'm married to a web dev who has taught me not all he knows, a glimpse of what he knows. That I'm enough to be dangerous, that I understand HTML, can write enough to get me by. And then I sort of faked it till I made it on the designer side. So I understand this balancing act. But for somebody who lives and breathes it every day, I am stoked for this conversation. Before we get there, Adam, tell us your story. What do you do, and how did you get there?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Well, I think, as you mentioned, I've done development in web and tech for over 20 years. My first gig was actually for the Department of Defense. So I worked for the military, building the military relocation information network. That was literally like my first job out of school, was just jumping right into that. I moved to Jacksonville, Florida, lived near a military base, worked for the military, not enlisted. And that kind of kickstarted it. I loved it ever since then. I've just loved working in tech, working with the web. I've done freelance work for years. I've worked for an SEO agency. I've worked for several large corporations, including Anaplan, Carta, ActiveCampaign. And now I am in cybersecurity at Illumio, so I can add to my B2C, B2E, et cetera, fintech, SaaS, and cybersecurity. So I think I'm touching all the industries here.
All the industries that have beautifully complex audiences, to say the least.
And I guess I enjoy that. I enjoy that challenge and finding like how each one has unique, you know, needs and targeting and so forth. Aside from my development experience, I spent the last 10 years working in marketing departments, marketing teams, learning digital and growth and demand gen marketing. And so now I am the head of SEO and web strategy at Illumio. Cybersecurity company. And yeah, in a nutshell, that's kind of how I rolled into here.
Rolled. I love that. Hi, Trevor. Good to see you. Thanks for jumping on with us. Trevor got awarded. Trevor, you're going to ask your brilliant questions, so we're excited for those. Just touching on your experience, Adam, because I feel like, one, you've had this really unique journey of A, landing into the Department of Defense right out of the gate. That's no small feat.
It was daunting when you're barely out of school. Yeah.
Did you go after it? Was this like, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to work for the Department of Defense? Go team.
It was totally serendipity, like random. I had a friend of mine who had just gotten a job doing the same thing at a higher level, and he said, I want to bring you with me. And I said, sure. And like, I'm a kid, I'm barely out of school. And they're like, hey, you're in charge of 8 other developers and streamlining this whole section and doing market research. And I just sink thrown into this super deep end, like, immediately.
Did you have your swimmies?
Well, I'm here, so I survived.
That's fair. let's talk about this lovely dichotomy you've had, because I think all of this is going to play really nicely into our conversation. But this element of marketing and web development, it seems like you sort of normally in typical tracks, you pick one. You either go full on development and in deep with the product, or you become a marketer and you sort of leave the website behind and say, nice to know ya. But you seem to have walked this beautiful path of both. How do you feel like in retrospect, because life is 2020, you look back on all of the things, you know, how do you feel like you've been able to balance this delicate line and stay, have a foot kind of in both?
I was lucky enough, like I, you know, was purely in a development style world, just doing SEO and web dev and design. When I got hired by a tech company and was hired into the marketing department. And oftentimes, like some, like a lot of companies run their websites where their website is run by engineering or IT, and they never touch marketing. And maybe marketing gives them requests, but they like work somewhere else completely. And I was lucky enough to jump into a, you know, forward thinking company that basically like had web just completely folded in with, like I sat right next to brand and design. I sat right next to content on either side of me. And we all collaborated and worked for marketing goals. And so I was able to kind of start soaking in a lot of marketing from that. And I did actually have a little background. I worked for about 2 years as a manager at a market research company, years before that. I also gave a talk at Sonoma State University for avoiding corruption in market research, mostly because I worked for a company that was corrupt.
First-hand knowledge. I mean, that helps.
How can you speak on what not to do unless you've seen someone do the wrong thing?
Wow, what a journey you've had. And it's all culminated to this one place where now you are the head of web development at Lumio, which is a cybersecurity company. Last question for you about your journey, because I find that it's an interesting one of, you know, cybersecurity's got sort of like this moat around it of, you can't get in unless you like find your way through, and usually either by accident, rarely on purpose. But then once you're in, you're in, you're good to go. So what's your story there? Did you, in terms of how you found yourself in cyber, and do you love it? Is it a love-hate relationship? Like, how are you feeling about this industry as a whole? It's a complex one for sure.
To be honest, it wasn't something I was seeking out. I wasn't trying to get into cybersecurity specifically. But when it came across my desk as an opportunity, I just thought like, well, there's another industry I haven't worked in and that I would like to work in. And yeah, that same conversation came up. I think you mentioned like there's kind of a, it's a tight knit crowd and it's like got its own bubble for sure. And so there was some kickback like, oh, you don't have experience with cybersecurity. The only thing I can offer in return is I have experience with everything else, so I think I can have
yes, especially not just everything else, but the complex, that those complex buyers, man, they really know how to make our jobs hard.
Yeah, this
and
is
finances
one of the most
definitely lends itself to that. Yeah, so this is one of the most complex audiences you worked with.
Yeah, I mean, there's very specific targeting, you know, for cybersecurity is like not the biggest market, you know, and the people who run it sometimes are in different departments, sometimes they're C-level, you know, and targeting C-level people for, you know, en masse via the web is a difficult task on its own. And yeah, it's like really hard to draw the ideal customer profile for cybersecurity, depending on what type you're doing. We've struggled with kind of like, okay, who exactly are we going for? And like, where would they be? And the answer is like 5 different things.
That sounds about right. Yes. We're going to unpack that in a second. And maybe that lends itself to our next question around, or maybe it doesn't, but what's one big challenge in your current situation role, whether it's your personal or whether it's a company, whether it's a role, like whatever challenge is sort of keeping you up at night, what's hard right now in the land of Adam?
Well, we are going through a couple different evolutions on the website. And so first got there, I just referred to everything that had come before me as version 1. And we immediately got down to working on version 2, which ended up kind of like throwing a grenade in the old room, watching it all burn. the old website was running on a kind of a clunky CMS, Drupal. I'm not, but some people are, so that could be
And good
controversial.
on them. Yep.
Yeah, I just came in the experience of making any kind of request to the web team, of executing anything, of localizing anything, optimizing anything was extremely long and involved and required like 99% the help of an agency that helped build the site anyway. So we immediately went to rebuild the site, and we did a bunch of research into different CMS systems. We actually settled on Webflow. Flow is kind of an unusual choice. It's like it's fairly new, you know, but it's definitely like a modern solution. And it does a lot of great things from a tech perspective. But in particular, it really helps us tie in with Figma and brand design. Our brand design team is like second to none. They're absolutely awesome. They live and breathe in Figma, and Figma and Webflow look almost identical.
Yes. Yes. Big
And they work.
fans.
Yeah, there's actually a plugin to like literally copy a component from Figma and paste it into
That's
Webflow. Yeah, we had a brand team that is like a lot more hands-on than most wanted to like give them the capability to like literally get in there and touch stuff and like be able to not just hand us a Figma and hope it goes to plan. So yeah, that was a big one. Just basically just reinventing completely the process of how we do everything, of what technology we're building on, of what teams can access it and use it and how. And now that we've finished that, we call it V2. And we're already planning V3.
That's exciting. It is a whoo, big lift moving system to system.
Oh yeah, and we're not going to change systems again. Thank everyone above. Yeah, the change was pretty difficult. Yeah, it took about 6 months.
It's sort of like the thing that holds people back so often, speaking from experience, of switching from one system to another. But man, when you got to do it, like the sooner you can make that, in my experience, like the sooner you can, when you see it happening, if no, you got to switch systems, buy the new system and just go. Like otherwise, you're just delaying the inevitable, and then you pay for it through subscription fees on the back end. Like if you want to move.
There's resistance to that too, because I found in almost every role in marketing or digital marketing, whenever a new person comes on, they come with their own preconception of like what tech we should be using. And so a lot of marketing leaders complain like you come in here and you say, now we need to use this instead of that, you know, because it's what you're familiar with or what you like or what you prefer. And you know, like what is the argument? Like, is that truly a better solution? Like, and
Yeah, it's a good question.
in this case we've proved that out. Turnaround times are about 5 times faster and about 6 times cheaper.
I mean, hats off to you all for that, because that in and of itself, no matter what system you're using, is pretty magical. Let's get into our topic because I really want to understand, and you mentioned it, of agency versus internal. As an agency owner, I truly believe that for bigger companies in that scale-up enterprise realm of the world, owning your website and MarTech is incredibly important. And it takes not everybody able to do that all in one go, but like eventually, like that, in my opinion, should be the gold standard. But I also don't live on the brand side. So I'm looking for somebody to either back me up or tell me I'm wrong. So what do you got for me, Adam? Am I on the right track? Or does it really, in typical marketing terms, it depends?
Yeah, I've worked with every shade in between the two. And I think ideally it really just comes down to size and resources. I've worked, you know, at agencies for companies where they like didn't have any developers or web team or anything. They just had no bucket for that. So they just were 100% reliant on an agency. And then I find as the companies get bigger and into the 500 to 1,000 employee range, you know, that then eventually they have either an IT or a marketing department that also includes a web team or a web department. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's 2 feet, you know, sometimes it's 10, but depends on the scale of the company. The more you have the ability to have resources internally, I find it's better to manage it internally. Just because agencies are their own business, and it's always, you know, it's not always going to 100% align in terms of priority and goals and speed and turnaround. So if you were a smaller company, I would 100% recommend that you use an agency. If you're a bigger company, I would say start to build a team and let them run.
First of all, I just want to acknowledge the fact that you are drinking tea on Tea Time, and it's like the cutest teacup in the world.
This is my wife's, but I did bring tea for Tea Time.
You did. And what tea did you bring for us?
It's a lemon ginger. I also have the plate and scones.
Those look like blueberry scones.
They are blueberry scones, yes. So blueberry scones, lemon ginger tea. I'm ready and rocking.
You're in the zone. You're not messing around today, Adam. I appreciate it. Make sure you get that pinky high in the air over there. Let's talk about one of the things you mentioned is, you know, when you do transition to having that team internally and the different resources you sort of have from IT to web development. You're on the more marketing and brand side, so I'm curious there of what your relationship is. Do you solely own, because there's sort of this bridge that needs to happen between the front end, the pretty side, the marketing side, and then the back end of the product and like once you sign in side. So is there a clear divide on that? Do you all work together? What's sort of the setup?
The situation we have here is similar to the situation I've had at several other companies, which is that there is a very clear divide. And I believe that that is probably the ideal situation. The marketing website is a marketing tool. Like, I mean, your .com is sales. Your .com is a funnel. Your .com is, and the product is definitely its own beast. And when you try to run them both simultaneously, you're either having one engineering team running on two different systems, or you're trying to make one system do two different things. And neither of those is ideal. So when you can have one team doing one thing, which is marketing and a marketing website, I think it's best to like let that separation exist. And obviously, like if you can coordinate on like brand and UI, UX, and you know similar elements, like you don't want a complete disparity there. Like brand should be a top of mind for both teams. Yeah, that's just my take on it.
Almost two different audiences, from the unknown audience or the just figuring things out or do I want this thing audience, to the I'm in this and I need to build this and I do this thing. And it's not necessarily a mindset on the user standpoint, but a mindset on the marketers or the product marketers or the web team standpoint. It's hard to make that switch all the way up to never heard this thing, what am I going to do about it? All the way down to that nitty gritty user experience is where, you know, we talk so much about the user. It's about the user. Yes, but you need the right marketers who are in the user mind in that moment of in which things are happening. I feel like that's what you're saying.
Yeah, like, you know, meet people where they live. yeah, so I think that I've worked at companies where we had to kind of fight for that and like wrest control away from engineering and IT. I've worked at companies where you do just have to work, you know, alongside engineering and IT. And that's not to say there's anything combative with that. Like I actually love working with like developers and backend developers, programmers, you know, and you often collaborate on projects at the various companies I've been at. But yeah, like I said, I think it just makes things a whole lot simpler when you're kind of working in your own domain. And some people say like, well, shouldn't it all be the same? Shouldn't it all run off the same set of data? You know, shouldn't it all have access to the same resources? And, you know, in a grand perfect world, like, yes, but there's no CMS system to date I've ever seen that can do that in a significant way properly for marketing and for it.
Tell me more about that. My gut tells me that engineering probably wants to work more in hard code, where the marketing side wants to work more in, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound bad, but I really don't mean it because it's really helpful, but more of that WYSIWYG, less code, but like move things around and things do what I tell it to do versus trying to learn a different language, quite literally.
That can depend. Well, on the team that you're working with. I mean, if you have skilled developers who are either, you know, full stack or you have backend and front end developers on your team, like, there's a place for a backend developer and there's a place for a full stack developer on a marketing team, because then they can run the backend and the programming and the custom requests. Like, and many teams I worked at do have that. And so I've worked at teams where the website's just as technical as anywhere else you might find it, but it was located in marketing. And I've worked for, you know, like in the situation we're in now, where we did deliberately choose something that was low code, and to you know to have kind of a WYSIWYG interface for our, you know, people in brand and design who do so much heavy lift here. So it just kind of depends, I think, like I said, on what the situation is, what the skill level of the developers are, and how big of a team you have. If you have two people, you know, maybe a WYSIWYG choice is the best for everyone because it's the simplest and most straightforward. But if you have 10, then you can afford to have people who specialize in back and front end.
It sounds like we also have the tools available to us to actually make those decisions these days, where it's not sort of a needing of both. You know, back in the WordPress days, you sort of needed that back end developer who could code the things into the WYSIWYG to a certain extent, but then you still needed somebody to go make a ton of changes on the back end and manage the thing, because we all know WordPress is a heavy lift, whether we want to agree to that or not. It is.
I've played with WordPress for many years.
And now we can find this beautiful balance in deciding what we need. I don't know, like, as on the designer side, which I was more on the designer side than I was on the developer side, I've just sort of leaped to the dev side recently, because I really just start, like, I just couldn't fight with CSS anymore. And so when I could actually, like, lay it out and design it and then kick it to a developer who then just, like, made it all magically happen, I was like, yes. And then I was introduced to more of that Webflow, Tailwind sort of, like, world. And I was like, I could do both. This is amazing. But, but like, yeah, CSS definitely slowed me down from a coding standpoint. So it sounds like you have more of a design-heavy team who could actually control the code now without coding.
We have our web team to execute most of our requests, but we have it in such a way where that, like, when we're collaborating or building something new, that portion can be done right alongside brand. Get their hands dirty if they want to. You know, we basically made it so that they have the option to dip in whenever they want to, but they don't have to. But yeah, in regards to, like, my design background, I started more of that. Like, my ideal career when I was probably 15, 20, which I don't know if this is common or unusual, I wanted to be a creative director. I wanted to, you know, work fully in design. And so I learned Photoshop and Illustrator, Flash. I worked in animation for many years. I do video editing, sound editing, music creation, everything multimedia that you can think of. I've probably dabbled in it for a year or two. I love it. I love being creative. I've always been a creative person. But I find myself kind of, like, shifting more and more and more into, like, development and code and CMS and back end and, you know, so forth. So that's just sort of, like, the path that I've taken. And, you know, I still enjoy working in marketing because it is more front end than back end, just to be safe with that. With the phrasing there.
Terminology.
More front end than back end. I specialize a lot in front end development. I'm a pretty good translator between designers and developers, executives, and other departments.
That is a knack. Because it's different. It's a different vocabulary. It's a different way of thinking. It's a more visual way of thinking versus a more verbal way of thinking. And so for you to literally jump between those sort of languages is very handy.
Is that code switching, they call it that?
But code switching. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I tell people that I speak tech, I speak marketing, and I speak executive.
Oh man, I want to unpack the executive side so hard, but we're gonna hold on that for a second. Well, maybe I can end there. Let's talk about the user experience side and the marketing side, because with your experience and as well as your technical capability, as well as your design capability, let's unpack some of the best practices for folks of, like, what you see to work in the industry and maybe what you haven't seen to work in the industry. So we're talking specifically to B2B marketers with a front-end website who need to get folks from a complex audience folks, people who know they need, they don't know they need marketing. Marketing just exists. And every once in a while, they have to come in contact with it for better or worse. And they go along with it, not because they want to, but because they have to. So that's the mindset of our audience. How do you, you know, in your experience, from a user experience standpoint, the website, how does the website play a role in that? And what are some of the best practices that you've seen to really help those audiences through making those decisions?
I think in terms of best practices, there are obviously, like, there's a best practice way to do X, Y, and Z, but you still have to choose X, Y, and Z. And so I usually tell people to try to, like, you know, work within the limitations that they have. And so if you only have two developers, like I said, you know, maybe a solution is better and you can actually bring in people who aren't coders from the other company to work. You know, but if you have resources and a bigger team, you can, you know, get a little more creative. Relying on an agency entirely, I think, can often be frustrating. And so I really recommend, like, that people get a partnership with an agency, like, where you kind of work side by side, and, you know, feel like more connected, or, you know, use an agency to transition to a self-sustaining ecosystem. A lot of what we did when we built our new website agency to help the migration, and when we had trouble throughout the whole process of migrating the website, we went to them many times and said, we need you to do this, but we also need you to teach us how to do this. And we shared expertise. And, like, you know, it may not be in the agency's best interest to help their clients move away from them, but but yeah, it was important to us. And so, yeah, like, we want to know how this site works. And we want to be able to maintain it and do everything, when you know, even if you guys are shut down tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's important to have a good partnership between you and the agency, regardless of who owns the end code at the end of the day, because you got to know how to use it. And if something did happen to the agency overnight, you got to know what to do about it, especially if you're in cyber. Partnership's so important, regardless of partner, like, in any partnership, it really does need to come down to mutual respect for one another and making sure each party has what they need at the end of the day. In terms of some of these, you know, I do think it matters on the size of the agent, the size of the company you're working in and the resources you have. In terms of the website user experience, so we've covered a lot now on the internal resources and that experience, because we're all users and we have our own user experience of the tech tools we have to navigate every day, and making sure that we have there's nothing worse than showing up to work and your tech not working. Especially now in a remote world where you have to sort of, like, be your own IT person and troubleshoot your own tech. I wasn't going to say tech there, but I'm going to say tech. And so,
gotcha.
So yes to that, of us being our own users of that experience and making sure that we have the right resources to fit our needs based off of the guidelines that we're sort of boxed into, depending on budget, people, roles and responsibilities, so on and so forth. And you gave us a lovely example of what that could look like in a perfect, I don't say perfect world, but in your scenario, especially when you have a designer heavy user base.
And a company willing to give you the leash to do that.
Yes. I mean, that's amazing, right? And unpacking how you made that happen all day, we're going to get to, because I do want to understand your executive speak. Yes to that. Let's talk for a second before we get there about the end user. So an end user comes to the website and they're trying to figure out whether this is the right thing for them. And you talk about the user experience a lot. And when you're talking about enterprise websites, they're huge and complex and multi-levels deep. So for any enterprise or even scale-up companies that are listening right now, what would sort of be your, I don't want to say advice because I hate that word, and maybe you have some stories to lend itself to, but, like, in your experience of what you've seen to work and not work, what would be some of your go-to best practices to ensure a good user experience and user experience?
For user experience in particular, I would say gather data and be driven by data.
That's about what.
I think we have internally in our company, we say data driven everything, and we like that, and I'm a big fan of that as well. We use tools, like custom scripts and Hotjar and heat maps and A/B testing and so forth, to basically figure out the answer to that question. The answer isn't go do this. It's try what you think might work, find out what does and doesn't work about that, and tweak it and refine it and tweak it and refine it until the heat death of the universe.
Iterate. Yes. I totally agree. It has to start. Yes, all four of them. It does have to start with the data and start and end, and then repeat the cycle of reading the data. What data points are you looking at from a web dev experience? I imagine obviously ROI and revenue at the end of the day. But what are the leading key indicators of like what matters to you of trying to figure out whether this is the right user experience to lead to that at the end of the day?
Well, I've often fought with the concept of, like a lot of people say, like, well, our website is for CRO, our website is for conversions, nothing but a funnel. So like literally if we could just put 15 CTAs all over the homepage and numerically like that gets more clicks than having an actual content heavy homepage, let's do that. And it's like, well, you might be winning in numbers here, but you're losing your soul in this. I do have to kind of like fight that battle between like, we want to make something that is actually like user friendly, that is easy to understand, that is welcoming and interesting, and converts, like at the end of the day, like you said, does it convert? Does it turn into ROI? And I think that having genuine, like, good content and genuine good UI, UX, and, like, experience is the real path forward for any company. So, like, just trying to get there with, like, trickery and funnels and 3,000 CTAs and, forcing everyone to just, like, go to a blank landing page with a form, Not that we don't have landing pages, not that we don't have CTAs all over our website, but it's a matter of balancing that with good design and good feel.
I always like to ask myself a question when I'm seeing somebody on LinkedIn showcasing their latest quote unquote hack of, is this a marketing play or is it a marketing ploy?
I like that.
Who is this really for? Is this for the user or is this for the brand? Because users will see through that all day.
I think that's why I have such high respect for our brand and design team. Like I said, they do a lot more heavy lifting than most companies I've been at. One, they're just dynamite designers. One of them, I think, used to be the head of design at Logitech, and they both have good experience and they're both amazing in Figma and can like basically create designs with you real time, and it's pretty incredible. I've done design and they like blow me out of the water, by 100-fold. Like, so it's great to watch them work. And yeah, they are good designers because they think about all that cohesively. They think about, is this accessible? Does this have the right contrasting colors? Is this WC3 compatible? Like, is, they ask a lot of the questions that classically are asked by the web team or never asked.
Those are really good points. Let's sit with that for a second, because I don't know that we're all thinking about that. It's this balance between wanting to be cool and wanting to be accessible and finding that. So colors are definitely the contrast of things, color blindness for sure. In terms of how your team is asking those questions and then the fruition of those, have you seen... it all comes back to numbers and data, like you said. In your experience from maybe previous companies working within this company or even before, you've had this wonderful variety of experience. So maybe you have seen this and haven't seen this, but like, is there a true difference in terms of the numbers of when you do think about that accessibility versus when you don't?
Like, does accessibility drive conversion or ROI.
Or even like time on, like even leading indicators of engagement and time on site, just like people being able to like, oh, I can read this.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, right? Like accessibility, like is often like associated with someone who's like, you know, dealing with a disability. But it could just come down to like having the right amount of contrast and colors and text, and like making it readable, like you said. And it's something where like any average person could read it if they squint and concentrate, you know, but the fact that the accessibility standards are there force you to kind of think more clearly. And I think they just kind of make your, they force you to make design more sensible. We all want to be cool. We all want to be creative. We'd all love to have websites made out of like slinkies and circles, but you know, like there's a reason things like flow the way they do. Best practices for design, best practices for development, for UI, UX, and for accessibility, often intersect in like just having sensibility, like the cornerstones.
I feel like the best websites in my experience have seemed to simplified. They're not trying so hard. There isn't as much overlay. There's a little bit of movement in animation, but it's not everything is moving and animated. Is that a trend you're seeing? What are sort of some of the trends you're seeing in terms of website design and development towards not just accessibility, but just in better user experience?
I think you're describing like what hyper-focused research has determined. Like, so, you know, when you say like, oh, they're not trying so hard, like there's a way to look like you're not trying so hard. And there's a way to be simple, but simple and still have info on the same page and have some animation and not too much animation. Like that is the result of refinement. You know, that's not, I don't know if that's a trend so much as it is like finding out what doesn't work and chopping that away piece. Too much animation is distracting. Too much information on the screen is like not delivering or not getting read. And so I think like I said, like what you're describing is less casual trend than more like focused results of really like drilling down with data into what works and what doesn't.
Less is more, folks. Less is more.
Speaking of that, in terms of the I had a question. I was on the edge of my seat there, Adam, and it's gone because I was hanging on to every word. But I, in terms of trends and the user experience and this idea of less is more, nope, it's gone. It'll come back to me. It'll be okay. We're gonna move on.
Well, less is more. I think, like, you know, take a step back to your original question, I think like simple, you know, simple is better in, you know, in a vacuum, like just that makes sense. My point is that they get to simplicity by data, not necessarily by intuition. And I think in an ideal world, like we'd have enough people who are all skilled in UI, UX and behavior to just draw that conclusion, but it's very often the result of finding and data.
In terms of product market fit and website design and experience, there's got to be this lovely meet and greet that happened between the two. How, in terms of messaging, how do you help the website deliver that messaging in a really important way without it feeling like, especially with software, it's really hard. It feels sort of vaporware-y and like, is this tangible? I'm going to do what I need it to do. Let's sit with messaging for a second. How you navigate that? Is it come back to just the data? Is it the product team? Is it marketing speak? What have you seen work?
I mean, in our case, content and comms like are, you know, people use brand to deliver our voice. Decide what that is, and so we often like look to them and lean to the actual message. And I think it's good to let people excel in the areas they excel at. So maybe it's not for me to decide, you know, what our messaging is. Like, it's to the experts we have on hand and let them decide. I think, like you mentioned, you know, pictures of products and things looking like vaporware. I've seen a lot of companies struggle with products that don't necessarily look good or like look sexy, You know, like some of them are like big, clunky, giant enterprise applications that like may do amazing things, but to look at it in a screenshot, you'd be like, that looks like a weird spreadsheet, you know? So, you know, and a lot of companies actually end up doing like an overhaul to their product to make it like to beautify it, you know, and to make it like pretty and cool and appealing. But, you know, not all products work like that. And so you can take a screenshot of what you have and put it up on the website, and that makes it more tangible, but it might also make it less desirable. And so sometimes the answer is to illustrate a similar version of that layout, like drawing and illustration and vector, and kind of give a rough idea of like, here's what's happening on screen and here's what we're achieving, you know, and it just depends. Like if you're working with a product that does like have a lot of flash and like look really cool and on its own, like you can just present it. But if not, sometimes you just need to decide what layer of abstraction you need on top of that.
I'm perusing the Illumio site as we talk, and I love these vectors and graphs because I think it just does a better job of displaying the story of what you're trying to say versus the screenshot of the thing that might not actually like do what you want it to do, right? And so animation could certainly play a role. There's a wonderful tool called Walnut. .io, I think that people are using in terms of sort of like a demo, like a walkthrough demo that you sort of experience on your own. But it's this whole idea of less is more. It's so hard to do well, of getting your point across, not making it feel like vaporware and having that beautiful market fit. And so hats off to you and the team for making that happen. Let's talk about the executive side of it for a second. We mentioned having the executive speak. Doing any sort of big website lift is a huge undertaking, to say the least. And so what was it for you when you walked in and felt like you didn't have the right tool set to get the team where they needed to go? What was sort of the action plan in making that happen? Did you just like show up to executive team and say, this is what we need to do? Or was there...
Not.
I would hope not, but I had to ask the question.
I've learned my lesson, and thankfully I have enough experience doing this over and over and over again, not to just come in and say, you need X, but you need something to support that, right? And so first thing I did was just gather information from everyone on the team. And one of the questions I asked are like, what are your pain points? What are you frustrated by? What takes too long? What's more difficult than it should be? And collate all that data. And then just also do things like look at your performance and your speed and your metrics. And like, you know, hey, our core web vital scores are on average in mobile at 15 to 20 out of 100. You know, like that's something tangible you can bring to the table. And then you can also look at the cost of the agency or the cost to operate. When we made the change from our old system to our new system, like our hosting bill got cut in half. And we immediately saved like, you know, $50,000 a year or something like that. You know, we...
It's not time change.
Yeah. So basically that's my approach, is to basically gather a bunch of supporting data. You don't want to just go in there and say, this is my opinion, I'm an expert, trust me. You want to go in and say, hey, I've been asking a lot of questions, I've talked to a lot of people, I've done a lot of research, and here's a really cool slide deck for that. I know you executives love slide decks. And yeah, they really do. So yeah, and then you bring all that and you put it together, and you just say, you give them like no room to argue. Like, I've covered every base, I thought of every corner. This is cheaper, this is faster, this is better, this is less painful, this will streamline and improve our speed of turnaround times going forward. You know, and you do have to be careful not to like promise the moon, because there's a things that like trip up a design and development or migration, especially when you're moving to a new CMS or an unknown CMS. But you know, you have goals that are attainable, and I you know, always tries to like under promise and over deliver where you can. But often is the case, similar to what I found at Illumio, where they just kind of haphazardly stumbled into where they're at, and as a result, obviously, it's just not great aspects. And it's easy to quantify that. Once you can quantify that, you have the data, you bring that data, and that's your...
If there's anything we can all take away from this conversation, it's that the devil is in the data. not the details. So capture your data, tell the right story. Did you do any research, like when you were starting to uncover, you asking these really intentional questions, getting the really great feedback? You've obviously used tech stacks beforehand, but did you do your own research to see like if there was something, a better fit out there for your new, for this team that you were working with? Did you just say, no, I know what works from beforehand, so we're going to use that? What was sort of your approach of, okay, I have all this data, I got to take it to the exec team. What'd you do in between to make sure you had that end-to-end story?
I do the research. I'm totally, you know, honestly and genuinely like a tech nerd in the sense that I like will read about web technologies, even if I worked at a McDonald's. I'm interested about it and I'm passionate about it and I try to stay up on tech and trends, but you get into a cycle with a certain company and a certain CMS and you get comfortable and you work on it for years, you know? And so it was actually me trying to stretch away from like a knee jerk reaction when I got here was like, I've worked with WordPress for, it's literally since WordPress was invented, so maybe 15 years or something. It's easy for me to say like, well, we can make this all work with WordPress. Like, you know, I've done it before. But I always do try to take the time to step back and Google and look out there and say like, what would be the best fit for us? What's the latest trend? What is taking off? And like, what is, you know, better at doing this specific thing, you know, than other companies? And we took a chance, like moving to Webflow. I had never used Webflow previously. I was moving to a CMS that I did not know and I was not familiar with. But I was impressed enough by how they, you know, how it works and how similar it is to Figma, how intuitive it is, that I thought, like, okay, this is actually pretty friendly to devs and it's pretty friendly to non-devs. And it's easy to understand. So we took a chance and, you know, it looked like the best option. And so far, to answer your question, I always do try to stop and do research and not just go.
I think that's so key. And I just want to be clear with folks who maybe aren't familiar, but Figma is the most magical tool of all when it comes to, in my experience, comes to designing a website. So I use Tailwind, and Tailwind and Figma actually have a similar connection where I can pull in the components from Tailwind and then build up landing pages from there and then just port out the HTML as I see fit. So, and I think Webflow works similarly. So if you have a design heavy team who's very particular and they really like Figma, this was definitely, Webflow is definitely a way to go. Can you remind me, what's the CMS you're using?
Webflow.
Webflow is the CMS. Okay. Yes, because I also know it's the components piece as well in terms of the HTML and CSS IDs versus not fighting CSS. A whole new world, folks.
You can build your own library up in Webflow. Like, basically, you're just creating CSS classes and stuff. So you can choose like a pre-existing set of classes like Tailwind. We're using one called Client First, which is by the agency FinSuite. Helped us migrate our website. And they're just kind of considered like the foremost in terms of like Webflow development. So they have their own basically version of like Tailwind for Webflow. You know, it's not Tailwind, but it's a similar idea. So yeah, they gave us that Lego set. Like,
it is a Lego set. That's why I love it so much. So the way that it works is, before, when you were working with systems like WordPress or even just hard coding, you would have your HTML on one side, your CSS on another, and you have to create IDs on the HTML to then tell the CSS what you're trying to do. Then you have to finagle the CSS to get the HTML and have it all aligned. And it was this really painful, painful, painful process. And now there's these wonderful systems like Tailwind, like Webflow, like these libraries you're mentioning, where the CSS is already built for you. And you just got to pull the ID in where you need it, which just gives you so much more flexibility, because in every section, every component you build can be its own, still has to feel like part of the website, but you can give it its own little bit of spark and identity and movement and not have to be like, tied in or have to go rebuild a whole new thing. Well, Trevor's got some questions here. He wants to know, is it fast? So in my experience, super fast because it's static. What's your...
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I think like the reason that we chose Webflow I'll answer your question about hosting in a second there, Trevor. But we chose Webflow because basically it has an interface on top of it that's the tool itself. But what it spits out is just HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You end up with the result of what you'd get if you hand-coded it anyway. And that is, like, to me, the holy grail of CMS systems. Like, to get away from PHP and abstraction and Adobe Experience Manager and JSON and, you know, and Jekyll and so many other, like, weird layers you can put over everything. And just, like, basically, like, the end result is literally you can export it and move it to a static host if you want. You could just go host it on AWS and it would run. Like, because it's just a normal flat website when it's rendered, when it's done. So by nature, that's generally the fastest way because there's less dynamic, you know, things happening in the background. It's just like operating a static site, which is generally accepted to be one of the fastest ways to do it. In terms of hosting, the hosting is perfectly fine. The product is one and the same. So if you have Webflow, your hosting is Webflow and your CMS is Webflow. All one thing. It's always up to date. It's completely cloud-based. And I love that that gets rid of one more layer too, which is your hosting. There's no question as to whether or not it'll work, and there's no question as to whether or not it's up to date. It is all managed for you.
It's pretty magical. Pretty magical. We use, like I mentioned, Tailwind's Next.js, and then Cloudflare sit with it. So it's not quite as streamlined as Webflow, but what a great example of Webflow and how that can work, and then the beauty of that, and
it's Cloudflare.
Yeah, Cloudflare, yeah, that's awesome.
Apparently, I love
Cloudflare. Just works. It's kind of something that just works.
We actually did struggle with that a bit because I think Webflow is designed to be completely self-contained and just run and host and present all one vector. So when we said, hey, we want to run our DNS through Cloudflare and have more proxy, cache, and security options, you know, they were like, oh, yeah, you can do that, I guess. Like, you know, it definitely wasn't something where they're like, oh, yeah, we support that 100%. Like, and so, you know, we had to trip over a few traps getting that to work. But it wasn't too bad.
I might need to do another show with you, just the two of us, so I can take all that down and then create a little blog post for us to share. That would be amazing. Because I do think this is the future. I do think it's moving to this. To the static web generator place. And so giving people more of an option of like what that could mean, especially on a cyber side, I think could be incredibly useful. Adam, I'm so grateful for this conversation of trying to understand how to take your website in-house, how to set it up with the right resources in your team, understanding your team, whether they're more web, whether they're more design focused or more dev focused, and getting the right tools in place and getting a little out of your comfort zone to make that happen, folks. It's hard, believe me, but making sure you've got the right tools for the right people is huge. And then building that user experience through the data, understanding the data, making those iterations over time and not just going on your gut is incredibly important. And I'm so grateful for this conversation. Adam, did I miss anything? Is there anything you want to double down on? What's your like last piece of, or your last thought for folks as they think about, you know, bringing their website in-house and making it the best user experience they can?
Yeah, I mean, the right tool for the right job. And I will say, like, I have kind of fallen in love with Webflow. It's kind of become one of my favorite CMSs very quickly. Yeah, I highly recommend it. I think it's actually good for most cases, except for at a certain scale, it starts to falter. So if you're dealing with 1,000 pages, 10,000 pages, that's probably fine. If you have 50, 100,000 pages, it might start to get unwieldy on that platform. So there is a ceiling to a scale in terms of Webflow, but anything below that, I think works extremely well. I think just being data-driven, and embracing marketing as the owner of the website and like the way to move it forward is probably my two key takeaways.
Amazing. Last question for you, Adam. We're wrapping up here, folks. This is my, you are more than a marketer, more than a web developer and designer there, Adam. In the last 3 years, in the change of the world, thank you, COVID, What's changed for you? Have you picked up any new hobbies? Are you traveling more that the world's opening up? Have you dove into something totally different? What's changed for you?
It really like just made remote a reality, and obviously by necessity. So I think when originally everything, you know, the whole world shut down, I was at Carta, I think, and they basically just sent everyone home and said, okay, we're all working remote now. And I think it was right before I segued into Active Campaign. And when I got there, I was just hired as completely remote. I worked with the CMO at a previous company, and so she kind of like got me in the door. And, you know, I just said, well, like, they're based in Chicago. And I said, well, I'm not moving to Chicago. And she said, well, I want you to run the web team. And I, you know, let's do this. So I said, all right, just hire me completely remote. And so we did. And so that was actually my first job where I was hired to be completely remote. And so since then, I've worked remotely. And so when I left Active Campaign and went, you know, went here, I was looking for remote jobs. And I moved from California, from the Bay Area, from near San Francisco to Las Vegas, because that's the, you know, the closest place I could go to actually afford a house that wasn't like a closet and two homeless people holding it up. Not to be callous there.
There's truth in that. That's hard truth, but there's...
We were able to afford a house here in Vegas, and I, you know, have a great fiber connection, and I work remotely, and I have a great setup, and I have always had a great setup at home and the ability to work at home. And when I do freelance work, it's where I do it, and it's always where I'm most comfortable and where I'm most productive. And so it's been absolutely eye-opening and game-changing to me to be able to do remote and do it successfully and do it like happily. I say I was commuting 4 hours a day in San Francisco, and I lived 20 miles away. I don't know if you're familiar, but the traffic.
I did. I lived in the Bay Area for a stint. So where were you traveling one into the other? What was the?
I lived in San Leandro and Hayward and Emeryville. And so I kind of get getting closer and closer to San Francisco, but it doesn't really matter because once you get near the bridge, it just turns into like inching along. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, my commute one way was easily hour and a half, 2 hours most of the time. And so I was spending 3 to 4 hours minimum in a car. So the second we were at remote, I got 4 hours a day back.
What did you do with those 4 hours?
I took half of them and slept in, and then and the other two extended my work day. I end up, I honestly legitimately, like, people make arguments for and against time. I legitimately like get more done and more productive and more focused, and I work more here than I did going to an office, chit-chatting, going to lunch. You know, like, the argument for like it's more productive is 100% legitimate in my mind.
On the flip side of that, where do you find your belonging? Where do you find your people if you're not going into an office and you're not engaged with the, we all need it. Belonging is such a huge part of who we are as humans. So if it's not at work and in person, then where is that for you?
Well, in high school, I was a goth, so I don't really need people.
You know, nothing wrong with me alone.
Introverting is an option. I would say I struggle with that, especially moving to somewhere new. Like, you know, living in Las Vegas is like, oh, like, well, we don't know anyone here. And it could be the case if you're working remote at home, too, is like, how do I get out and go do things? But I think it's just important to, like, follow your passions. Like, I have a weekly D&D group that I run. Met people through there who ended up being some of our closest friends. And so, you know, I just kind of took what I'm passionate about and I put it out there to the world, and that's my duck call, and see who answers.
I love that. Yes, we all have our duck calls of what we're passionate about, and then being able to find our groups of folks who have the similar vibe, I think, is easier to find in a remote world than to, you know, stumble upon it in person, especially when we're in person and at an office with people who aren't necessarily the people we would pick. It's different. Yes. So Yes to everything you're saying. Yeah, I'm on board. I'm the same way. Bit of an introvert, come out an extrovert in these moments, but, you know, finding the right people who I can nerd out with is and board game with is where I like to hang. So I'm with you on that.
Meet up with my Cholo choice.
Yes. Yes to that. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about your web hosting, about Webflow, about just building a team for the user experience? Where are you these days?
I mean, you can Google my name and you'll probably find lots of examples of random things that I've done. But, you know, you can, I think LinkedIn is probably actually the number one way to reach me. And it's literally my name, linkedin.com/@AdamAragon. So it's easy to remember, easy to find. You know, I tend to do most of my like networking connection through there lately. I used to have like my own website. I still have like a freelance website somewhere that I haven't touched in 10 years. But yeah, I tell people like, you know, like especially for people looking for like professional questions and exchanging of tech and ideas, like start there, you know, and if we hit it off and we're cool, like we'll meet on Facebook, you know, and someday in person, who knows?
I love it. The remote world here, it's a wonderful place. So we get to meet people from all over the globe and find our duck calls. I'm here for that. Adam, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Yeah, I absolutely enjoyed it. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode
okay, so like, purpose, and to share this episode of brought to you by MKT Inc. Digital Marketing.
Plex B2B brands get found via SEO and digital ads, measuring it end-to-end with analytics. It's hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. And if you'd like to be a guest, DM me. Let's hang out. I'd love to see if you'd be like to be a guest and go from there. Adam, thank you so much.